What, Joe? As long as they plant one in return. Wow. I will plant one Bezat Hashem in Israel. I don't think Canada is lacking trees. I don't think here there is a problem with trees in Canada.
They are planting.
There are problems with trees also in Canada.
They are planting.
Oh, they are planting.
Trudeau overpromised, so he's not fulfilling his promises.
Forest fights. Okay, okay. Good to know. All right. Good evening, everyone. Good evening. Let's see who's on Zoom. Tina. Terry.
Tina's here.
Oh, Tina's here and Terry's here. I see the tea. I saw the tea. Terry, I'm missing person. What's going on? That's fine. Karine, hello. Hello. Hello, Fega. Okay, good evening, everyone. Hello. Good to see you. Good to see you all. We'll take off the glasses. You like, it's not new, but after a day that I said like for I think 10 hours in front of a computer, I can't see good anymore. I had to bring my glasses, but I prefer being without them. Good evening. Hello. Good to see you all in person. That's a very nice crowd for tonight, thanks to the weather, I think. Welcome to the third class of Introduction to Jewish Philosophy, and a very special one. Everyone has sources. They're at the end. It's a very special evening because today, as I wrote in the email, we're going to reveal all the secrets that Judaism has to hide from us. Almost all. We'll try to unveil as much as secrets as possible. There are three sources for you, just to make sure you have the three of them. The first one is the sources as usual, which is Judaism's Untold Secrets Introduction to Kabbalah. This is the first source for today. The second one is this stapled two pages. Says the 10 Sefirot, which we're going to talk about in a minute. There's some pictures inside. There's this. There's the other little Bobby. We need to figure out a name for him. And a table. And as usual, as we say in Hebrew, as the Keinu B'Kodesh, there is this important figures in Kabbalah. This outlet that I prepared, so you will have a sense of the different names in Kabbalah in general, and a little bit of what are their role in Kabbalah, what exactly did they do, who are they, when did they live, when did they pass away, and I will talk about the names during the shiur, so you can just, if I say a name, like Ramban, you can go back to this sheet and look exactly who the Ramban was. Yes?
Why are we doing Kabbalah when I hear so many people saying, don't touch Kabbalah until you know everything before?
Oh, don't touch Kabbalah until you know everything. You don't know everything? You sure you don't know everything? That's a very good question, which I will relate to. And surprisingly, that's not the first question that I will relate to today. We're first of all going to learn Kabbalah. Then we will say who can be exposed to Kabbalah. So I don't give you any options or any choice. You're all going to be exposed to Kabbalah today. And later on, we will see if we can be exposed, yes or no. My quick answer would be, you're all already exposed to the Zohar and Kabbalah, even if you don't know it. Okay, that's what I was going to tell you. And I will prove it tonight. I will prove that we're all exposed to Zohar and Kabbalah, even if we didn't want to, even if we don't know it. And at that note, I would say that it would be very ambitious for me to try and wrap up the entire introduction to Kabbalah in one class, in an hour. It's going to be very ambitious. I will try to do my best. I will ask you if you have a long, detailed question. Please write it down if you have a pen or something on your phone and keep it to the end of the class. If that's a short question, just to understand a definition, a term, something that you didn't hear or something that you want like that, then please go ahead and ask me. I will also want to say that I'm using, for preparing this class, I used this book called The 13 Petaled Rose. I read it in Hebrew. I'm sorry, but I have an English copy. I don't know how to say the English name. By Rabbi Adin Steindalt, Zichrono Livracha. You can all see it here, also on the Zoom. I used that book. This is an introduction to Kabbalah. You can pass it over, yes, so you can see. By Magid, that's the English translation. For some reason, I don't know why, but the English translation one is 100 pages less than the Hebrew one. Usually it's the difference. I didn't figure out exactly what did they took off from the book, but probably there's some things that they took off. So maybe the thing that I will talk about today, maybe if you're going to read the book, you're not going to find everything. I have no idea. But this is the official one. And I will also, when we get to the Zohar, I brought one copy of the Zohar, the Kabbalah book, and I'll pass it around so you can feel it, see it, maybe feel the holiness, and all secrets of Judaism in your hands. And at that note, I said it's going to be very ambitious. I'm going to start. And originally, I thought to combining, I was very, I had a lot of courage. I thought, let's do a combined class, Kabbalah and Hasidut together. And then I started working on Kabbalah, and I figured out it's not going to work at all. I do want in that series, though, to touch Hasidut. We need to see how. I might add one bonus class about Hasidut. Or maybe we will do a mini-series about Hasidut specifically, because it's worth learning, engaging. We'll see exactly what I'm going to decide. I'm gonna see what how it's going to work with Kabbalah, and then we will see. I want to open with a question. If last week, those of you who attended our class last week, you remember we talked about the rationalists. We talked about the rationalists. How come God, emuna, faith, and logic in our mind, and our senses, how everything can get along? We dive very deep into the Rambam's Shita, into the Rambam's writing. The Rambam's as the Maimonides as the major, the main rationalist in Jewish philosophy. But today I'm going to go all the way to the other side of the barricade. Nothing that I'm going to say today is going to make sense. Okay, I'm warning you, nothing going to make sense. And this is the essence of it. Nothing in Kabbalah and in the Zohar going to make sense. And this is a different Shita. This is a different Ashkafa. This is a different view of Jewish philosophy. And it's good for us to see all the sides, all the barricade, all the spectrum that we have, Baruch Hashem, in Judaism. And again, I want to open with a question. And this is very interesting. What is Kabbalah? I want to hear you. What is Kabbalah? We'll start in person and then we'll move to the people on Zoom. What's Kabbalah? You all heard the name. Also, Madonna heard the name. What's Kabbalah? We'll talk about Madonna also, don't worry. Harvey? What's Kabbalah? No? I think Maggie's like, Harvey.
Something Jewish.
Something Jewish. Some would disagree. Okay, something Jewish.
Okay, I'll guess. Kabbalah is a separate that was written by Rambam.
Okay.
It's really based on the Torah, but to explain how the universe functions.
Okay. A book that was written by the Ramban. Okay, it wasn't written by the Ramban, and it's not a book. The Zohar is a book. Yeah, the Zohar is a book. Not written by the Ramban specifically, but yes, but talking about how the world exists, what are the mysteries of the world. That's right. But Kabbalah would be this Torah. Anything else? What's Kabbalah?
Mysticism.
Again?
Mysticism.
Mysticism, that's right. Mysticism, that's a word that I need to learn in English. Mysticism, yes. How?
Voodoo.
Voodoo. Okay, one more. Yeah, we're going to be more and more pagan in this class. Yeah.
Jewish theology.
Thank you. That's the answer I wanted. This is Jewish theology, Jewish philosophy. First of all, this series is a Jewish philosophy series. Kabbalah is, first of all, Jewish philosophy. And this is the core of Jewish philosophy. Not like any other Jewish philosophers, like last week, and like we're going to see maybe next week and 2 weeks ahead, who try to be like halacha or hashkafa or like faith discussion. This is philosophy, pure philosophy, talking about what God is, does God exist, how was the world exactly created, what are the mysteriouses behind our universe, behind our existence. Questions like, how can my prayers be answered? How can I change or influence the divine? All those kinds of questions are in the Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah, first of all, as you said, this is Jewish thought, this is Jewish philosophy. Afterwards, after we understand that Kabbalah is Jewish philosophy, then we can try and see what defines or what specializes Kabbalah as a different branch in Jewish philosophy that not everyone agreed with. I wrote down in my note the official definition of Kabbalah, and this is the Torah of the secret and the Jewish
mysticism.
Thank you. Mysticism. The Jewish mysticism and the Torah of secrets.
It's ism, just like communism. It's mysticism.
Mysticism. Thank you. Mysticism. It will take some time, but I will try to. Mysticism. And well, I don't understand. If that's a secret, how is it like, how there's books? Is that a secret? I mean, a secret, the moment you write down a secret to a book, then that's not a secret. So one of the things to remain that our sages told us, and not everyone, we'll see, as you said, but one of the things that our sages told us is you are not allowed to be exposed to Kabbalah until certain this and this conditions are you filled up. For example, we'll see one of the conditions are you must be 40 and above. All right? I'm the only one here who's not 40 and above? I think I'm the only one who's not 40 and above. Okay, so you're all fine. I'm not fine here. And another condition that we will see in a minute. But before we dive into the Zohar, into the Ari, into the Sefirot, which is we're going to have a lot of fun, I do want to start and ask when exactly those, I would say, questions about what can one learn, what can't one learn, the fact that we even say there is a Torah, there are laws, or there is an entire, I would say the word Torah in that case. Yeah, there is a Torah, an entire Torah that we don't know. When exactly did Judaism came up with this idea? And actually, this is not starting the Kabbalah. We find it already in the Talmud. The Talmud, look at source number one in your Judaism's untold source sheet, untold secret source sheet. In source number one, in the Mishnah, not in the Talmud, the Mishnah of Masechet Chagiga, this is the tractate, the Masechet, that we are learning now as part of, we started part of the Daf Yomi. And in the second chapter, the first Mishnah says, one may not expound the topic of forbidden sexual relations before three or more individuals, nor may one expound the act of creation and the secrets of the beginning of the world before two or more individuals, nor may one expound by oneself the design of the divine chariot, unless he is wise and understands most matters on his own. This is a very difficult Mishnah. So the Gemara there in Masechet Chagiga tries to explain what exactly is those arayot, as we translate to forbidden sexual relations. Why exactly only in three and not more individual than that? What exactly is ma'aseh habriyah, the act that act of creation, what exactly is the act of the design of the divine chariot, all those things the Gemara tries to explain. But this is the first time we see, if we put aside the Tanakh, because Ma'aseh Merkava, this act of design of the chariot talks about Yechezkel, Ezekiel, about his prophecies that he sees this Merkava with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he sees those seraphim, the angels. There's an entire thing back there. And the Gemara, the Mishnah says, you know what, if you want to learn this, really, not just read the text, not just read the talk. You want to learn, you want to dive inside, you must be at least not even one. You must need to be very smart. And if you think you're very, very smart and you can bear it, then you'll be able to learn it only by yourself. The creation, the mistresses of the creation, that would be something that you can do in two. And then the Talmud, if we jump to source number two, based on this Mishnah, tells us a story. And this is a basic story in the world of the mysteries of Judaism. This is a very fundamental story. The story says, the sages taught, in source number two, four people entered the orchard. Now, they say in Hebrew, or not in Hebrew, this is a Persian word, pardes. Now, something that I learned, I know this Gemara for a long time, something that I learned when I prepared this shiur is the English word paradise comes from the word pardes, all right? Pardes in modern Hebrew comes from that Persian word, which means an orchard. Back then, pardes was like, think like an enclosed place. Today, it's going to say paradise, whatever that is. We use it as orchard. So four entered this orchard, but that's not an orchard. This is like dwell or dealt, as Steindatz explains here in this Talmud, dealt with the loftiest secrets of Torah. And they are as follows. Those are the names, Ben Azai and Ben Zoma, Acher, which is the other name, which is the other named for Elisha Ben Avuya, and Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara proceeds to relate what happened to each of them that went into this pardes exactly. What we don't know what this pardes is. Ben Azai glimpsed at the divine presence and died. And with regard to him, the verse states, precious in the eyes of the Lord is the death of his pious ones. This is from Psalms. He died. Ben Zoma glimpsed at the divine presence and was harmed. In other words, he lost his mind when he saw that. And with regard to him, the verse states, have you found honey? Eat as much as it's sufficient for you, lest you become full from it and vomited. This is from Proverbs. And Acher, this is Elisha ben Avuya, chopped down the shoots of saplings. In other words, he became a heretic. That's why he's called Acher, all right? And Rabbi Akiva came out safely. So there's four rabbis. Each and every one of them said, I'm going to learn the secrets of the Torah. And different things happened. Then one died because of it. The other one lost his mind. The third one became heretic.
I can't download it. I thought I had downloaded when I had the name of the rabbis. I can't download what you're reading. I'm having trouble downloading.
I send another link again. Is that okay?
We'll try it again.
Try again. Okay. Let me know if this doesn't work. And Rabbi Akiva came out safely. Now, what exactly happened here? What is this pardes? What are those secrets? What is this Torah that people just can come in and learn and die and get harmed because of this?
I don't know how.
I'm sorry. I will send it here again. I will try to do my best. For the rest of you, it works, right? Yeah. So, don't know if I can help with that one. Let me just see if this will help. Sorry. And if not, then if someone can send to Susan's email the source, it would be wonderful. And please
it's
do it.
In the email that you sent.
Thank you.
Link.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
I went to that.
Thank you.
I didn't
so I'll try to read it loudly. I'm sorry, Susan. I'll try to read it as loudly as I can. I'm sorry. Again, this is maybe that what happens when someone walks into this part. We all walked into it and one lost the sources. This is something that can happen. So what exactly is this pardes? What exactly happened here with those four rabbis? The Rambam, and now you'll say, the Rambam, last week's scholar said everything should be logic and like there's no mysteries. The Rambam refers to this story. And look what he says. Something fundamental that was the foundation to all the thing that we know today about Kabbalah, because his influence, as we said last week, his influence and an impact on Jewish philosophy was something that no one could ever reach. He had an amazing impact on Jewish philosophy, also on Kabbalah. And he wrote as following in source number 3. Though they were great men in Israel and great scholars, he talks about those four, not all of them had the intellectual power to know and grasp all these matters clearly. And I say that no one is deserving to promenade in the vineyard unless he be filled with intellectual bread and meat. That is to say, one must know what is forbidden and what is permitted, and similar to this of the rest of the commandments. In other words, he says you need to eat bread, you need to have the meat, you need to drink the wine. In other words, finish Talmud, finish Mishnah, finish Halacha, go to the series about introduction to Halacha, introduction to Talmud, introduction to Jewish philosophy. Then maybe after you finish learning for many, 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 many years everything that Judaism has to offer, maybe only then you maybe can take a glimpse inside and see what's going on there. Because even the great, great rabbis that the Talmud is teaching us, they died. They were harmed. Something happened. In other words, the Rambam says, and that's not supposed to surprise you by now, because we met it last week. In other words, he said, don't even deal with it. That's not something that belongs to you. And based on that, the Shach, Rabbi Shabtai Cohen, was one of the commentators of the 17th century on the Shulchan Aruch, on the manifest of Halacha in general in Judaism. He wrote down a footnote that became very popular. Everyone memorized and everyone remembered that. He says in source number 4, some says that one is not allowed to learn Kabbalah before he turns 40 years old. Why 40 years old? Become wise. We say in the Mishnah in Avot, Ben Arba'im Lebina. We say that in 40 years old, that's for wisdom. One that comes 40, he becomes 40 years old, he already has children, he got married, he experienced something in his life, he's a real adult, and now he can sit down, open the Zohar, and try to read and understand what's going on there. Two problems that, again, not that I found them, the other rabbis say about this rule. The first problem is, with this 40 years old rule, is that The Ari, Rabbi Luria, which was the biggest Kabbalist of all times, we will talk about him. Rabbi Luria of Tzfat, he was the biggest Kabbalist, and you know in what age he passed away? 38. First problem. He passed away in 38, and he was the biggest Kabbalist of all times. First problem, all right, but this is an amazing achievement by 38 years old. Second problem is that the same Siftei Kohen, Rabbi Shabtai Kohen, who writes on the Shulchan Aruch, he knows, but I don't know why he wrote it down, that the author of the Shulchan Aruch, he was a huge Maran, Rabbi Yosef Karo. He was a big Kabbalist. His halacha is, you can find Kabbalah in many, many, many places. Kabbalah is not only Jewish philosophy, as we said at the beginning. It has influences in every and each field of Judaism. It has influence in halacha. How do I know that? Because if you open Shulchan Aruch or Rechaim, the first part of the Shulchan Aruch, and you learn the laws, the halachot of waking up in the morning, you will find there halacha that says you should wash your hands when you wake up in the morning. And why should you wash your hands when you wake up in the morning? Says Rabbi Karo, says write down, because you have ruach ra'ah. You have such an evil spirit in your hands. This bad energy, spirit. Exactly. What's that? Because of that, there is an halacha. And halacha, and we said halacha is rational. There is an halacha that says one, when he wakes up in the morning, first thing should wash his hands. So, Kabbalah has influence in halacha everywhere. Not only that, I can give you many, many, many places that Kabbalah, even if we don't know them, but the source of this halacha is Kabbalah. And that there is a problem. If someone doesn't believe in Kabbalah or doesn't want to accept Kabbalah, how can he understand those halachot? First thing, first problem, we need to learn halacha. We learn it, we know Kabbalah exists. Second problem is, and we'll say it in a minute, Kabbalah had a huge impact in our prayers. Our Siddur has many elements that coming derives from Kabbalah. We'll see in a minute one of the things that we all sing together. We'll see in a minute something that is from Kabbalah. And the Shach and the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam, were not it wasn't that everyone agreed with them. The Gra, Hagaon Mivilna, who was a Kabbalist also, there were many rabbis who were Kabbalists, he said something totally different. He said in his commentary on Proverbs, Proverbs 2:9, in source number 5, he said, one must learn Kabbalah, not even maybe, you must learn Kabbalah. So when he internalizes the secrets, he will also understand the Pardes, and he uses the Pardes from the Mishnah, but now with initials. Initials for what? Pshat, the simple text of the Torah. Remez, the hints, that sometimes there is a different layer in the Torah. There is a remez, there is a hint behind the words. Drash, which are the midrashim, which are the things that we don't see. And sod, which is the secret, the Kabbalah, the behind the psuk in the verses. This combines to the word pardes. Pei reish dalet samech. However, he says, if one doesn't learn Kabbalah, then he won't understand even the pshat. The grass says, you must learn Kabbalah. You're 6 years old, go learn Kabbalah. Don't wait until you're 30. Don't wait until you finish the shas. Right, it may be difficult. There might be a lot of questions. But again, if we don't think logically, there is no reason why to say don't learn Kabbalah. We tell many fairy tale stories to our children. Princesses and dragons and I don't know, whatever you can think of. They watch Disney. Okay, they're not afraid of mystery and magical stuff. What's the problem to teach them another magical thing? And to tell them about demons and tell them about angels and tell them about many, many, many other stuff. Why not? And it was amazing to see that back then in the Middle Ages, and so later, there was this school in Spain led originally by the Rambam with some Spanish scholars who were very much Kabbalists, but in general we can say the Spanish, who said that no, Kabbalah only when you learn, only when you're very melumad, only when you learn a lot of Judaism. And on the other hand, we had the France, the from Provence, from France. And they were those school of rabbis in France. They said, no, wait, you need to learn a little bit more. Originally, it was Spain against France, and then it also the Spanish learned a little bit of Kabbalah, and the French say they're against Kabbalah, but we call it this school, it's the Spanish school and the French school. And how do I know that we have a lot of influence in our tefillah? You know, again, I'm not a chazan, and I don't know how to sing, but we all sing, especially in my shul, in Shaar HaTefillah, but maybe in your shuls as well. Look at source number 6. Rabbi Shimon, this is from the Zohar. Guys, we're looking Zohar. Okay, that's Zohar. Rabbi Shimon said, when we take the Torah scroll in a congregation, the gates of heaven of mercy open themselves, and we arouse love on high, and it is required that a person says the following. Say what? Brich shme de mare alma brich kitrach veatrach yere utach im amach Israel olam upukanech iminech. Ach ze leamach bebet mikdashech veleamtui lana mitov noarach and it goes velekabel tzotan berchamin. Go on and on and on. And at the end, yera vakadam ardeti iftar liba. We sing it. We, even if we don't want to learn Kabbalah, we sing Kabbalah every time we take the Torah out of the Ark. And that's not the only place that Kabbalah and the Zohar appears in our prayers. No, that's right. Not in all Sidurim this special bracha appears. And there is an entire disagreement whether originally this bracha is in the Zohar, maybe that's earlier than the Zohar, and the Zohar only copied it into the Zohar. Anyways, this is in the Zohar today. And there are some, for example, the German Sidur, which not many pray today. The German Siddur said, we're not saying that. That's Zohar. We're not reciting Brich Shme. We're not. Also, the Yemens. The Yemens who follow the Rambam, which is another discussion, why? What's the connection between the Rambam, the Spanish Rambam, and the Yemens? But the Yemens don't say Brich Shme. They don't say that. That's not something we can do. Not all this Kabbalah stuff in our prayers. You learn. You need to sit down and learn Brich Shme only when you're 70 years old. We can't sing it and teach it and sing it in the congregation. It doesn't work like that. So the discussion about whether one should learn the Zohar or not should learn the Zohar, I personally think was there is a victory to the side that says you should learn the Zohar because you cannot avoid it. First of all, even if you want to, even if you don't want to, it's everywhere. It's in your halachot. It's in your prayer books. And those who say, until 40 years old, the biggest Kabbalist of all times passed away in 38. So this is a problem. Yes, Rachel. One second, Marty. Yes.
How do we resolve the 40-year-old problem?
They don't. They say 40. 40, that's, 40, it's not the 40, the moment you blow out the candles from your, the 40 candles on your cake. The first thing you do is buy Zohar. That's not the... It's when someone who feels inside that he's mature enough or he grew up enough so we can open the Zohar and learn. Okay? Right. But I want to ask you, what is the Zohar? We read from the Zohar, we learned from the Zohar. What exactly is this Zohar? Okay, so this is the book of the Zohar. Let's show it to our friend on Zoom. Okay, this is the Zohar. This is the most famous publisher. Okay? The Zohar, and we'll pass it over in a minute. The Zohar... Martin, sorry. Yes. Do you know something that I don't know? I have no. If I could phone God and I will ask him. No, really, we don't know. We know that he was a huge Kabbalist. Many must have asked this question. I didn't see. That's a good question. But again, trying to ask, maybe God, maybe passed away because he learned it before age 40. Maybe. Let's say yes. Still, his influence on Kabbalah and the thing that he did, and he exposed everyone to it. Tzfat, everyone going to, I don't know, some of you probably when they went to Israel, they went to Tzfat. Tzfat, you just walk in the road, the streets of Tzfat, you feel Kabbalah everywhere. It's like in everywhere you go. This is the Kabbalah capital of all times. What?
I lived
here. Rachel lived in Tzfat. That's a Kabbalah thing. So even if we say that Ari maybe passed away, God made him pass, that he died because of that, he still exposed everyone to that, and there is no way back. The Kabbalah before the Ari and after the Ari is not the same, and we'll talk about the Ari in a minute a little bit more. I want to dive into the Zohar. The Zohar is many volumes, different parts, according to that of discussion. We'll read something in a minute. Based upon the order of the weekly Torah portions. It's not like the Talmud that has tractates based on halachic issues of the Mishnah. It is in an order of the Parashot Shavua, of our weekly portions, starting from Bereshit all the way to Vezot HaBracha. An additional two more external books, Ra'aya Mehemana, which is the shepherd, the loyal shepherd, in Aramaic, and one more, which I forgot the name. Excuse me. The entire Zohar is written in Aramaic. All right, written in Aramaic. It's a very difficult Aramaic to learn. It's not like the Gemara. There's more Aramaic here than the Gemara. The Gemara is something there's more than Hebrew. It's very difficult to learn. And in general, it says that all the discussions. It's like this, you can find here discussions like in the Talmud. One rabbi told the other rabbi. They say stories. One says one thing. He replied. Almost discussions like the Talmud. Something that makes it unique is that almost all the discussions are starting from one rabbi. You know who that rabbi is? Rabbi Rashbi. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rashbi. Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, if you all remember what happened last Lag BaOmer in Israel, in his tiyun, in his grave, in Mount Meron, the disaster that happened in Lag BaOmer, which is it being believed as his hilula, the way he passed away, even though that's just probably a mistake that someone copied a book and it says not simchat but shemet, which is not happiness but died. Never mind, probably he didn't pass away in that date. But everyone are going in Israel, many masses of people going up to Mount Meron in where Tzefat is, where his grave is in Lag BaOmer, and they're going and singing and having those fire medurot. And all this, and last year there was this disaster, tragedy that happened there because of the masses of people and everything. And it is believed, traditionally, all right, that the Zohar was composed by Rashbi. This is the common tradition. The tradition says Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Again, you will see him in our important figures in Kabbalah. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We're talking about Second Temple time. All right, he's a Tana. If you remember our introduction to Talmud and introduction to Halacha class, if you've been there, we talked about the Tanaim, which are those, the sages of the Mishnah. He appeared in the Mishnah. And it is believed, the legend says, that he wrote down and he composed the Zohar, and everything inside of it is actually said by his name or by the name of his 10 students. Okay? Not everyone agrees with it, both in the rabbinic world and specifically in the academic world. Okay, we need to say that. I don't think there is even one academic researcher who says that the Rashbi actually wrote the Zohar down. Okay, but rather there is a rabbi called Rabbi Moshe de Leon, Rabbi Moses de Leon. You'll find it also in your sources, in these important figures. Rabbi Moshe de Leon lived in Spain in the 13th century. And according to many, many, many researchers and some of the rabbis, we all know he's the one who published it for the first time. And for many, many, many researchers, he believed to be the composer of the Zohar. Some say only him. Some say him and other rabbis with him. Some say him and other generations after it. But most of the studies say that the Zohar was composed in the 13th century. Yes, Martin. Okay, so there is a story I did. I knew this question is going to raise up, and there was a source in the sources that I deleted. I will say it by heart that one of the rabbis in the 13th, 14th century said that he spoke with the wife. I don't know if that's a true story. I don't know, but this is a story that people know. He says that he spoke with the wife of Rabbi Moshe de Leon, and he asked her, do you think that Rashbi wrote down the Zohar and for thousands of years no one knew it and he just came up and just published it? And it is, according to this story, his wife, Rabbi Moshe de Leon's wife, said to this rabbi that, no, my husband wrote everything of the Zohar, but he wrote down as it was said by Rashbi because he believed it will be sold more, it will be sell more and more copies because of that. Yeah, that he wrote intentionally that it was written by Rashbi, so it become more and more popular and will sell more and more and more copies. There is a story that I don't know whether that story is true or not. This is a story that's being told by Rabbi, not by... So I don't know. I have no idea, but I don't think it matters. Even if it's by Rashbi, even if it's not by Rashbi, even if it's by this Rabbi Moshe de Leon, the Zohar is the most important Kabbalah book of all times. If we want that, if we don't want it, it doesn't matter because its influence in Judaism is endless. Okay, it's infinite. And in the 13th century, Rabbi Moshe de Leon publishes this book for the first time in the manuscript. And he started teaching it to more and more people. More and more people start to learn it. They copy it more and more. It started in Spain, goes all the way later in the years to Israel, specifically in Tzefat. Okay, specifically in Tzefat. And we'll discuss in a minute what exactly are the topics that are being discussed there. But it's important to understand that the Zohar was not the first Kabbalic book. There are more earlier Kabbalic books, not only the Zohar, that was written before the Zohar, okay? Other Kabbalah books, but they didn't have as influence on Jewish philosophy and Jewish theology as the Zohar. The Zohar is, for 100%, the most, almost I would say one line, some would say, those who are really Kabbalists, it's one line with the Talmud and the Mishnah and the Shulchan Aruch, there is the Zohar. One of the must-have books in the Jewish library, some would say. Some would say no. Okay, usually every shul is supposed to have a Zohar. Usually there is, but not. I mean, how many classes in Zohar have you seen in town? Almost nothing.
It's very difficult to read. You have to have
okay, but there are learners that can read it. I agree. People know Aramaic, and they can teach you translation. The entire Zohar is translated into English in Sepharia, by the way, if you want to open. The entire Zohar is translated into English in sepharia.com.org, online, free online, if you want to open and see it a little bit. And it's just not being, I would say, taught in most of the, I would say, mainstream part of Judaism, specifically in the more Hasidic parts of it. And most of the people learn Zohar by learning other rabbis that talk about the Zohar. For example, Rav Kook. Rav Kook talks about the Zohar a lot. Rabbi Nachman of Breslev, Baal HaTanya of Chabad, they talk about the Zohar a lot. Okay, and most of the time you learn the Zohar through those kind of rabbis. Okay? Very good. Any questions so far before we dive into the content of the Zohar? Yes, Rachel.
Who is the greatest Kabbalist in our generation?
In our generation? I don't know.
Madonna.
I don't know.
Madonna.
Madonna. Well, thank you for mentioning Madonna again. We'll talk about Madonna in a minute. Madonna didn't learn Kabbalah, just as you think she learned Kabbalah. That's not Kabbalah what she learned. I'm sorry to say that, but Madonna didn't learn Kabbalah. She learned something called Kabbalah, but this is not Kabbalah. Yes?
I probably should have asked this at the beginning, but since we started off learning in your previous classes of Talmud, Halakha, what is the timeline for Kabbalah? You said that the 13th or 14th century is when how much earlier does earliest Kabbalah thought begin? Did it come at the time of Talmud and other halachic thinking? How are they incorporated with each other, and they coexist?
Okay, so it depends who you ask. It depends who you ask. Yes, yes. Thank you, Susan, for saying. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay, Sisa Riki has a Zohar in her home. That's good. That's a good Jewish home. Ira asked that when exactly can I put the Kabbalah on a Jewish timeline from the Tanakh all the way to today? When exactly was the Kabbalah starting to develop and starting to rise up? Again, I said that it depends who you ask. If you ask the Kabbalists, they will tell you it's already in the Tanakh. Not only in the Tanakh, we'll see in a minute. It's all the way from the creation of the world. God created the world with, and the Kabbalah explains, not only that, Moses, God received the Kabbalah on Mount Sinai as part of the Oral Torah. That the Kabbalah is part of the Oral Torah. If you remember, we started the first class of Introduction to Halakha was to Talmud, was Introduction to Oral Torah. Many of you attended it. And we said an introduction of the Oral Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu received two Torot on Mount Sinai. First is written Torah, which is the Chamisha Chumshe Torah, Book of Moses. Second one is Oral Torah. Some say the Zohar is part of the Oral Torah, and he received it also.
So can you or must you study Kabbalah in conjunction with Talmud and Halakha?
Depends who you ask. The Gra, as we saw, the Gra, the Gaon Mivilna, the Vilna Gaon, we saw. He said, you must. If you don't learn Kabbalah, you're not understanding the Gemara, you're not going to understand the Torah, you're not understand the Nevi'im, the prophets, you're not understand the Mishnah. You must. Some say no. Some say maybe that exists. Maybe the Kabbalah was given to Moshe on Mount Sinai. Some say no, the Kabbalah is nonsense. But most of people don't think it's nonsense. They say we respect some of it or everything, but you don't learn it as usual. And you should just learn all the others. And after you feel like you filled your stomach with everything, you can move on to Kabbalah. Some say the Kabbalah was only starting in the, 10th century, 9th century, and so on. And that depends very much who you ask. This is why Kabbalah is very, very interesting, because you cannot just put it on a timeline and say the Kabbalah is a book. The Kabbalah is a Torah. It's an Ashkafa. It's not a book. The Zohar, we can discuss when exactly and when not. Okay? Yeah, that answers the question?
You can never challenge the Torah.
What, the Zohar?
No, Halakha, Talmud, is interpretations, whereas the Mitzvot and the Torah cannot.
You're asking if Halakha and the Talmud are interpretations of the Torah. We can call them interpretation, but not necessarily. I will send you back to the recording. It's a very important class. I will send, if everyone wants to dive in again, to this kind of questions, the first class of Introduction to Talmud. You'll find the record. You'll find the recording. You'll find everything there, talking about exactly what is a halacha, Talmud, Mishnah, mitzvot, and all of this in terms of the Torah. The Kabbalah is the third thing. Okay, the Torah and the Kabbalah is somewhere floating in the area. Some people say that from there, that from there, but it, for our generation, it exists. Okay, I will continue on. I want to say what exactly is written, to talk a little bit of what's written in the Zohar. So, in the Zohar, there are several topics that it discusses. Discusses Gan Eden and Gehinnom, Gehinnom and Paradise, Gan Eden, all right? Talks about a lot of what is called in Hebrew, Gilgulei Neshamot. Gilgulei Neshamot, I wrote it in English, reincarnation. All right? Reincarnation, in general, is something that is very debatable in Judaism. Some say if you believe in that, you're an atheist, Rambam. Some say that, the Zohar is filled with recreation. For example, it explains reward and punishment. If there is a tzaddik, a rabbi, that, I don't know, was murdered by the Roman Empire, maybe that's because his soul is reincarnation, thank you, of an earlier soul that that sinned and had to be punished. That's a very easy way to explain why bad things happen to good people and why bad things happen to good people and why good things happen to bad people. And the Zohar is packed with those kinds of things. The next world. What exactly is the next world? What is there is a next world? What is the Mashiach? What is the Messiah? All of those things. Something very interesting after what we said last week. How does a Kadosh Baruch Hu look like? Okay, something that says what's the appearance of a Kadosh Baruch Hu? What is it? That's discussed in the Zohar. We said last week, God cannot have an image. According to the Zohar, everywhere you can see how exactly God looks like. This is in the Zohar. And the most important, but not originally in the Zohar, and the most important, which we're going to dedicate our time left in this year to discuss, is the 10 Sefirot. Okay, take your sheets. This is the 10 Sefirot, this sheet. What are the 10 Sefirot? Who knows? Who heard of it? Who has a clue exactly what are the 10 Sefirot? What is a Sefira in Judaism? Anyone heard of it before?
I have heard.
Yeah, Joe, what have you heard? Want to share with us? Yeah. Okay, so Joe says this is a way of developing, correct me if I'm wrong, developing the spirituality of a person in terms of the divine, his relationship with the divine, which is actually correct. We will dive into every niche thing, and I will give an introduction, a broader introduction of what exactly is the Sefira. The word Sefira in Hebrew can have different meanings. The first meaning can be sapir, sapphire, the stone. Sapphire, sapir, which has spiritual meaning. Okay, we find in the Tanakh several places where there is the sapphire. The stone of sapphire has spiritual meaning. First thing. Second option for sfira is mispar, which is just a digit. Okay, a number. Which is sfira. Sfira would be a digit, a number. 10, eser sfirot means 10, counting to 10, 10 digits. Third one would be lesaper, to tell. To tell something. That the sfirot are the way of God to tell things to us, to the human beings in this world. The 10 Sefirot is something that everyone agrees on in Kabbalah. Doesn't matter where they live during the time. Doesn't matter if it's in the Zohar, before the Zohar, after the Zohar. This is the most common spread away thing that lies out in the essence of the Kabbalah, the Jewish Kabbalah. If someone asks you, what is Jewish Kabbalah? Tell me something. You try and explain the 10 Sefirot. This is a basic Torah. It's like saying, if we talk about the oral Torah, it's like saying, Moshe kibel Torah mishinai u'mesara liYoshua. God, Moshe received the Torah on Mount Sinai and passed it over. As basic this is in our oral Torah, in our Judaism, Sefirot is in Kabbalah. Okay? It's very, very important. What is the Sefirot? So, first of all, there is this very old and ancient way of drawing the Sefirot. Okay, the Sefirot are 10, I will call it foundations. I wrote down the the word. Oh, I said I called. There's different translation to that. I love the translation of an instance. Okay, Sephira is an instance. There are 10 instances of God. Of, 1 second, Ricky, please. There are 10 instances of God, which in by them he reveals himself to the world. Okay, by those 10 instances, God reveals himself to the world. In other words, think of 10 pipes. 10 pipes that connect this world to God. Okay? And if God wants to do something in this world, change something, change the way you act, change the way a nation acts, make a war, make peace, he will reveal himself through one or more of those instances. But not in a way that doesn't appear here. Okay? This is, in general, to explain what is Sephira. And there are 10 ways, 10 instances that the Kabbalah say that the God, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reveals himself to the world. And it flows both ways, not only by God influencing our world, but also, the Zohar says, we, and specifically after the Ari, Rabbi Luria, that said, we can use those instances, we can use those Sephirot to influence God also. In other words, when we daven, when we pray, and we want that God to listen to our prayers, we should use or concentrate or focus on one or more of those sefirot, of those instances. And if I concentrate on bina, which in English would be wisdom, if I concentrate to change in the way of bina, then the wisdom instance of God will impact the world. Now, let's dive about to every and each instance, and we'll try to understand what exactly it says. It's very difficult. I'll try to make do my best. It was very difficult to make. In order to explain it a little bit more, I made this diagram of this little body that we have. Okay, this is something that I made. It took me a little time, but I made it. Every sephira, every instance, have an equivalent, says the Zohar, an equivalent in one's body. Okay, in every and each human being, there is an equivalent in the Sephira by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the when we say that God created man in his image, this is the image. Okay? That God, by the way he reveals himself to the world, he created the man, the human being, who is every and each vein or something that part of his body connects to that. The first one, and some say it is a Sephira, some say not, most of them say is a Sephira, is Keter. The first one, all the way up. Keter is a crown. Okay, this Sephira, look, let's go through the table. You see the table on the other side? The first one is Keter. Keter says the divine Sephira represents God and the upper world. Everything that we don't understand, our spirituality, our neshama, our soul, our prayers, everything comes and derives from this Sephira. When we feel God in our prayers, this is this instance acting. This comes from here. This is why, according to the Kabbalah, the crown, this sephira, this instance, is above the head of the person. It's external to him. Okay? Second one. Second one is Chochmah. Chochmah is wisdom. Excuse me. Bina is the understanding. Chochmah is wisdom. Chochmah means the soul faculty that conceives any matter, often referred to as the first flash of intellect. The first thing that I can say something now, you get what I'm saying? Maybe you didn't really understand it, but you have the ability to absorb the knowledge that I'm trying to convey. This comes from the instance of Chochmah, of wisdom. Third, Bina. Bina is understanding. And this means that takes the original idea that was obscured in Chochmah, in the second instance, and expands and develops it both in breadth and depth. That means the way our skill to understand things in depth. Oh, now I internalize it. Now I understand it. There's two different layers of a human being to act in the world. There is understanding, there is wisdom. That's a way our wider brain that can absorb different ideas. And the bina, which is our way to internalize and understand it. And again, it flows both ways. Both for ourselves and both for God. God, Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he reveals himself to the world, when he acts in this world, it's by one of those. If it's exact, for example, by the Chochmah, then there are different things that God shows himself through Chochmah, through wisdom. I'll give a very shallow example. If you go to a very nice class of Introduction to Talmud, you finish it, you say, wow, that was an amazing class. This rabbi teaches amazingly. That was, wow, I felt God in every sentence. This is a way that God reveals himself in the world through one of the instances. Okay? Through one of them. We need to understand this is the way we connect with God. There is no other way instead of that. Now look at the Binah and Chokhmah, understanding and wisdom, are parallel to each other. Parallel to each other. Okay? Not for no reason. This structure has three different lines, three different posts. The left one is called in the Zohar the feminine side. The right one is called the masculine side. Why? Because the feminine one is more passive instances, and the masculine one is more active instances. That's why the Zohar calls it like that. While in the middle, it's called the zivug, which is the pairings, which means that every and each instance in the middle will combine, will be the pairing that allow those two different, I would say, instances to appear in the same time, even though sometimes they contradict. Now, how wisdom and understanding contradict? Because it works in two different parts of ourselves. We can understand, but not every time we will listen. Or we can hear, not every time we can understand. Some people say that da'at, as you see here, this is a little bit with the stripes right in the middle, where exactly in the brain. Okay? Some say that the da'at, knowledge, is another sephira, and those who say the da'at is a sephira, they don't count Keter, because Keter crown is above us. But most of the rabbis say the da'at is not a sephira. But da'at is the power to unite the intellect and the emotions. Now, look at the right hand. This is Chokhmah. The left hand is Bina. The middle one is da'at. Does that sound familiar? Chokhmah, Bina, Vada'at? Chabad. Chabad is the initials of Chokhmah, Bina, Vada'at. This is the original. Okay, Chabad, Chassidut. Again, that's why Chassidus and Kabbalah are very much the same. Chabad, a lot of their philosophy is based upon these three instances, in a sense. Okay? About a lot of stuff we can talk about it, expand this discussion a lot. There is more. There is Malchut, which is kingship. You see, the Malchut means, the next one is Chesed, kindness. Diffuses kindness to all without limit. This is the way when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you something good, that means that he revealed himself through the kindness. There is Gevurah, strength, the power and ability to limit and contract. You see why kindness and strength are opposite in a sense. And what connects the both is Gevurah, strength, is Tiferet, beauty. Beauty and is in the exactly in the body. And beauty would be blends Chesed and Gevura with harmonious and beautiful results. There is also Netzach. Netzach not from eternity, but from Lenatzach, to win, to overcome. This denotes the idea of dominance. There is Hod, splendor. It denotes with strain to the point of submission. Yesod, foundation, balances the two, facilitates communication, and is therefore the foundation of the world. Okay, foundation is the way that God created the world with this instance, by revealing himself through this instance. This is the way babies are coming to the world. But God reveals himself through us with this kind of instance. And the last one would be Malchut, kingship, which depends. Some say it in the mouth, if we draw it like that on a person. Some would say it's the last one, if it goes all the way down. Malchut is kingship, the receiver or recipient of influence from the higher sephirot. In other words, our ability to get, to receive influence from all other sephirot comes from that sephira. We can talk about the sephirot for hours. There is so much to say. There is connection. You just can see there is letters between every and each one. There's connection between the two. If you combine one sephira with another sephira, you get something new. There's sephira that cannot work together. Sephira that can work together. The sephiras are explanation for many things in the world according to the Kabbalah. This is only the first layer for us to understand that this is the essence of Kabbalah, that Kabbalah, the mystery, the sod, this is the secret. The secret is that God reveals himself to the world through those things. And not only that, the Ari said we can influence God by those instances. Okay? We pray. We pray. We dance. We eat. We concentrate. We focus. We work on that. We work on that.
No, the sephira.
on the Sephira. It's not. It's not superficial. It's not superficial. It's not an ATM, machine that I can just press. I want $50. I'll use the Bina one, the Wisdom one, and $50 comes from God. It's not that. We need to internalize it. We need to digest it. We need to unpack it. It has a lot of layers underneath it that needs to be done. As superficial as I could say it, those are instances that God reveals himself to the world through them, and we can influence God in a way through those sephirot as well. And there's so much more to talk about this. I will stop here. Yeah, let's stop here. I think there's a lot to digest, a lot to unpack in Kabbalah in general. It's not making sense. If you compare it to what we spoke about last week about logic and rationalism, it's totally on the other side. Kabbalah has a lot of influence. Again, in our prayers next time, we sing Brich Shmeh. Think that this comes from the Zohar. Think about the underneath meanings that it has. It has a lot of impact in our halacha, in our everyday lives. And I would say the biggest impact that it had in our everyday life, not in our everyday life, but in Judaism in general, would be what is going to be 500-600 years after, would be going to be the Hasidut. All right? This movement of Hasidut, of Hasidim, which again, we need to figure out, it's going to be a bonus class or something. We're going to see what we're going to do. This was very much influenced the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov was the founder of the Hasidut. Almost everything that the Hasidut has to offer comes from here, comes from those ideas, comes from that. Doesn't matter what Chatzer, what Rebbe, what Admor, they're very much diverse. There's many, many different styles and different groups within this Hasidut. They all share the same, affiliate with the Kabbalah in a sense, that Kabbalah has a strong place in their Jewish philosophy. And I hope that, this is a... another way to understand how big, how wide, how amazing is Jewish philosophy really is. Just as Jewish philosophy, that's a field that should be studied a lot for many, many years. We didn't even talk about other philosophies in the world, general philosophy and stuff like that. Only the Jewish philosophy has a lot to offer. And we try our best as we can in this series. And thank you very much. Bezrat Hashem, next week we will dive into a totally different thing. We're going to talk about the modern philosophers, Rabbi Sacks, for example, existentialism, for example, Rabbi Soloveitchik. We're going to see what exactly is going on in the past 100 years. And we'll see. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Hasidut. If not, we're going to add a bonus class maybe or next week or so. I'll figure that out. Thank you very much. I'm here for questions. I'm sorry that you had to hold your questions all the way now. You can, as they say, class dismissed. You're more than welcome to ask questions. I'm here. Thank you. Thank you very much.